Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, the New Orleans Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. This is Brian Diaz. I am your host. Very happy to be here with you today on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. As I always like to say, I think we're pretty much, we're in the home stretch to the weekend here on a Thursday evening. Hopefully Friday will treat you right. And then there's the weekend. So here we go. Weather's nice. It's a nice time to be outside. It's a nice time to be in New Orleans. It's a nice time to be alive. So thanks again for joining us here on the NOLA Drinks edition of the show. Got a good show for you today. Really excited about it, actually. Coming up after the break here in a little bit, we're going to do a little bit of beer news. All kinds of interesting and kind of odd things, I should say, going on in the more or less in the world of beer archaeology, a couple things like that. Yeah, there is sort of such a thing. I think I just made that term up, but paleobiology and some things. Don't worry, we're not going to get too technical on that front. And then in the second half an hour here in the first hour, that's right, I think that makes sense, right? The second half an hour here in the first hour, we're going to be chatting with Roddy Romero, who is the band leader of Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars. They are a Grammy-nominated music group, that's what I'm trying to say, out of Lafayette, and they're fantastic. It's a really interesting story that Roddy's got. They are playing at Pontchartrain Vineyards coming up this Saturday at 6:30 as the finale to the Fall 2016 Jazz in the Vines Outdoor Concert Series up there at the winery in Bush, Louisiana. It's going to be a great time. Weather looks really good. The Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars are a tremendous band. And interestingly, Roddy's got a very interesting story. Some of you out there, I'm sure, know his name. Started out more or less as a child star, as a teenager, and then has basically matured, done an incredible amount of things, and continues to play music. And I think they're finally getting the recognition that they're due as the fan. Fantastic musicians that they are. But also, interestingly, we will chat with Roddy as we do. This is going to be a newly coined name for the segment. I think if it sticks, we're going to call it Soul Skillet. And that's when we regularly chat with musicians here from Southeast Louisiana and New Orleans. And where this is going to go, of course, we're going to talk about their music. We're going to talk about what it is that they're up to with their creativity, gigs they got coming up, all that good stuff. But then the other thing that we're going to do is we're going to talk about their connection to food and drink here in this part of the world. If you were listening to the show a couple weeks ago, we had on the wonderful raconteur, I will call him, Paul Sanchez, a friend, and he grew up in Irish Channel. We talked quite a bit about him and with him about his music and then also his connection, which is quite deep with food. Paul's a big wine guy too, so we also talked a lot about some of his favorite eateries, bars in town, wines that he's drinking these days. So that's the idea of Soul Skillet, is that we're going to talk with musicians on a fairly regular basis and you know, talk about the connection to food. And obviously, as we know, this is obvious, stating the obvious here, of course, the idea of food and drink being integrated, reflected, shared, part of the lyrics, everything really, the flavor, if you will, quite obviously is well hewn throughout the music. And that's the whole idea of Soul Skillet, is we're going to do that from time to time. So we'll be chatting again with Roddy Romero from the Hub City All-Stars, deeply entrenched in Acadiana culinary traditions, including, I believe, working as a shrimper. So we're going to talk with him about that. And again, they are playing at Pontchartrain Vineyards this Saturday, 6:30, Jazz in the Vine. So that should be fun. In the second hour, I'm also equally excited. I will have three fantastic guests coming into the studio. I'll be welcoming Lior Madden from Pearl Wine Company. CJ Nielsen from Angeline, which is a, I don't want to say new, it's been around for about 2 years. Chef Alex Harrell's restaurant, where Stella used to be, there on Chartist in the French Quarter. That is a great restaurant, folks. If you have not been there, go check it out. CJ runs the bar, and she is going to be here. And then also Alex Corkerman, I believe is his last name. I haven't met Alex, and he is with a Vino Wholesaler. And what we're going to talk about, friends, is the week after next is Sherry Week. It's actually International Sherry Week. And we have a group, a loose band of merry fellows and gals here in town called the Sherry Mafia. And the three that are coming in today are three of the principal instigators behind what's going on with Sherry Week here in New Orleans. Sherry is a very, very interesting drink. For those of you that are into it, you know that. For those of you that associate it with some sort of sweet, creamy thing that your grandma or parents used to drink, listen in the second hour. We're going to talk really about what the beverage is about. It's got a fascinating, fascinating history. There is a fascinating process behind making sherry, all of that good stuff. And it's really interesting. It's almost a confusing past and a confusing process in a sense about how the wine is understood, even how it's made. So hopefully over the course of the last hour, that's going to be our At the Bar segment. We're going to be talking about sherry, unpacking how it is a wine. It is a wine, so don't think otherwise. How the wine is made, how the terroir, both in the vineyard as well as what's called a bodega, which is really an above ground cellar, how that affects the wine and how it's made, how it comes out, and really talking about some of the tortuous, past of the drink over the past 150 years or so, which is really going to be a fascinating conversation. So I'm greatly, greatly looking forward to that. A couple things going on around town, folks. Tonight, of course, as every Thursday, I shouldn't say as every Thursday because it's about to end, the penultimate Thursday of Jazz in the Park. They're at Armstrong Park on Rampart. Starts at 4 o'clock with a DJ. 5 o'clock, the music starts. The opening act is Marlon Jordan. And then the headliner is fantastic. I say this every week. Los Hombres Calientes, which of course is noted, famous, really amazing New Orleans percussionist Bill Summers. And also equally as noted and famous, not quite as old, a little bit younger, Irvin Mayfield, of course, fantastic horn player. So that's their collective effort. They've been putting out albums off and on for years, and it's a wonderful mix of New Orleans, Latin jazz, West African rhythms. It's some really neat and special, very romantic, very sultry music often, and then can be also be very energetic and very lively. That kicks off again with the DJ at 4. The music starts at 5. With Marlon Jordan, I believe probably about 6:30-ish is when, or 6 or so, is when Los Hombres Calientes will take the stage, and that goes till about 8:30. There are food trucks, food vendors, artists, and the best part, friends, it's free right there in Armstrong Park. So that ought to be good. I mentioned that Lior Pearl Madden from Pearl Wine Company is going to be coming in. We're going to be talking about sherry, as I just said. However, they also have an interesting wine tasting going on this evening. I want to highlight that because we won't have too much time to talk about it during the At the Bar segment when we talk sherry. It is a free tasting, and it is a new vineyard called Dancing Crow Vineyards. Brand spanking new, from what I understand, and they are based in Lake County, California. And some of the promo material that I was reading about that ask, are you familiar with Lake County? And in all honesty, yes, I am. I used to consult for that wine region back a number of years ago, and I did that for a few years. So it's just north of Napa. It is part of the North Coast wine region, which is made up of Napa, Sonoma, as we go to the coast. If we go north of Sonoma on the coast, we have Mendocino, and then essentially to the east of that and north of Napa, neatly making a little square, if you will, although it's not quite square, is Lake County. Now, you may not know a whole lot about Lake County. Most people don't. It's a wine region that's actually been around, like many in California, for a long, long time, decades, producing wine commercially, but oftentimes, and growing grapes even longer. For years, the grapes actually went into commodity wines or jug wines, if you want to call them that, known for Cabernet Sauvignon production, Sauvignon Blanc production, and also many other varietals. Those are the two largest grown varietals there. The climate in terroir is somewhat similar to Napa. It can certainly be a little bit cooler in certain spots, a little bit warmer in certain spots. But, you know, in general, and the thermal activity that basically relates to the volcanic soil and some of the other things that have gone on through Napa has slowly over time migrated up into Lake County. So the soils are a little bit more volcanic rich than Napa because they're a little bit newer in that regard. The concept of the value of wines coming from there, so arguably similar terroir of quality, and the price points are far less because, like a lot of people, haven't even heard of Lake County. And more wines, you see them coming into the market. There's a lot of wines that you've probably tasted or see in the stores that actually are from Lake County, have Lake County wine grapes in them, but you wouldn't know it by how they're labeled. A lot of the wineries there are mom and pop, pretty small and not distributed there, but that is not the case with Dancing Crow Vineyard. It's actually the former owner of Cartledge and Brown, if you're familiar with that winery out of Napa, who sold it in 2011. So that tasting is a free tasting at Pearl Wine Company, 3700 Orleans Avenue, from 5 to 7 p.m., friends. We're going to take a quick break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and we're going to be back with our segment called Suds and Such. We're going to talk a little bit about news in the world of beer. Oh, yeah, come on back.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz. Happy to be here with you. Playing a little Roddy Romero in the Hub City All-Stars for you, getting you warmed up for the next segment after this when we kick it off with Roddy. That is his new album called Gulfstream, which I highly recommend. Fantastic music, friends. This is a little segment here that we like to call Suds and Such. I like to call it that. I don't think anybody else does, but I do. And we're going to talk a little bit about beer. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the world of beer. One of them is that, this according to the Drinks Business magazine, U.S. Brewery resurrects Iron Age Braggot. Now, what is Braggot, you may ask? Braggot is basically a mead. And this seems to be kind of a trend, folks, going on in the world of beer. There is a brewery in the U.S. based in Milwaukee. They're called Lakefront Brewery. And they have collaborated with an archaeologist and anthropologist, Dr. Bettina Arnold. And she's based out of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee to essentially recreate an ancient brew. And how this was done is that traces of this ancient brew, and essentially a mead, as I said in this case, which is brewed honey, these traces material were found in an ancient cauldron. And Dr. Arnold was part of a team that discovered this bronze cauldron while excavating a burial plot dating to about 400 to 450 before the Common Era. So, you know, that's quite a ways ago, of course, 3,000 or so years ago, 2,500, my math's off. Yeah, right around there. We'll call it 2,500, near the Hunberg Hilfort area, which is in, Baden-Württemberg, that part of Germany. And, the person, was basically the person who was buried with the cauldron. And as part of presumably a funerary offering, the cauldron was seemingly filled with about 14 liters of quote, high quality mead. Trace evidence of the beverage was recovered from the cauldron, and further work by another scientist, a German paleobotanist named Manfred Roche, and also a conservator named Tanya Kreb, basically were able to break this down, study it, I'm assuming doing some genetic stuff and things like that on it. I'm not a scientist, so don't quote me on that. Uncovered the basic elements of the recipe. And as they did this, it turned out to be what's called a braggot, B-R-A-G-G-O-T, and that was actually known and quantified in writings and in other studies. So by figuring it out scientifically what the components were, they determined it was a braggot. This is an old type of mead that basically combines barley and honey. And then that was actually flavored in this particular instance. It seems there's some variation on what makes up a braggot with mint. And also with a bit of meadow wort, which acted as a preservative and was used in place of hops. So as they discovered to make this stuff properly, at least how they went about doing it, the drink took 7 hours to brew and then 2 weeks to ferment. Apparently, it's very smooth and pleasant and minty with an herbal edge, which sounds fantastic to me. But here's the sad news is that it's not going to be hitting the shelves anytime soon. The owner of Lakefront Brewery there in Milwaukee, his name is Chris Ranson, told NPR that while it's cool to taste, I don't think people would be interested in purchasing it to drink. I have to disagree with you, Mr. Chris Ranson. I would be interested in tasting it. However, one person and me, and who cares what I think, that doesn't make the market. This is also not really the first time in just even in the past year that similar projects have gone on with folks recreating ancient brewed beverages. Going back, this is actually in March, so kind of old news, but a brewery in Chicago, same part of the world, more or less, a little bit to the south, collaborated with the local museum. It's Off Color Brewing is the name of the brewery, and it's the Field Museum of Natural History there in Chicago. And they work together to reconstruct an old recipe based on findings at a brewery. In this case, not in, ancient Germany. In this case, in pre-Incan ancient Peru. Members of the museum's anthropology department were involved in the dig, and Off Color actually, this was a great collaboration. They were already providing beers to the museum's cafe. So they decided to work together on this. And this particular brew includes a moleberry, not to be confused. It's not mole, it's mole, M-O-L-L-E, berry. And this is also known as American or Peruvian peppercorn, as well as purple corn in the recipe. It's a so-called Wari Chicha-inspired ale, which I believe refers to the region in Peru. It is known and is based on a beer called Chicha de Mole. And that is a type of beer that was produced in South America even before the rise of the Incan empires we're talking about here in the 15th century. They actually found evidence of production of this in the Cerro Baú site in southern Peru in the first half of the last decade was when people originally came across this. In this case, we're talking about the 7th to the 11th century after the Common Era, or in the Common Era, I should say. And this is people from the Wari Empire, which were forerunners to the Incan Empire. The brewery contained a mill and a large clay, and these and also large clay vats were used that were used for boiling the mole and corn to release the sugars that induced fermentation. Samples of the mulberries and corn kernels were found in large numbers at the site. And the beer made from corn is called Chicha de Jora. And it is thought to be a mole component was then added to this for flavoring, although it may not have been added in many instances. Each clay vat was capable of holding about 150 liters of beer, which would then be left to ferment for 3 to 5 days until the desired potency had been reached. At least 12 vats were located at the brewery, which points to a capacity of about 1,800 liters in a single batch. That's pretty sizable for a small rustic operation. The beer was generally drunk ceremonially from special pitchers called Caro, which were then ritually smashed after the beer had been drunk from it again. So a lot of these Caro pitchers, fragments of those were found. Also, interestingly enough, that these pins that would hold shawls, they're called tupu shawls, and they were worn by women of high status in that part of the world, suggests a strong female connection to brewing in Wari society. And this is actually the case. There's a similarity to ancient Mesopotamia, Egypt, and Spanish societies, even where women were highly involved and perhaps even running the brew process and some of the ceremonial components of this, perhaps. So interesting thing there. I wanted to mention that. So a couple things in the world of archaeology. Now, here's one that's a little bit odd that I will run through here before we go to the break. A brewer in Sweden has created the world's most expensive crisp. Now, this is from an English publication. Also, this is the drinks business in this case. Crisp is a potato chip. Let's call it that. And they're calling it the perfect accompaniment to their craft brews. It's a brewery called St. Eric's Brewery, and they're saying it's the perfect pairing to their beer. These crisps were devised by a chef named P. Lay, and is made with a matsutake, which is a rare Japanese mushroom, and a special truffle from seaweed from the Faroe Islands there in Sweden that can only be found in the cold tidal waters there. So they're talking about how they're very proud of their beers, and they wanted to make a crisp, a potato chip, if you will, that would stand up, pair excellently with, be the perfect crisp, as they're trying to say. Here's the part. You get 5 in a box, and the box of these crisps costs 46 pounds. That's $56, friends, U.S., for 5 potato chips. So you're paying about $11 and change per potato chip. They've all been made by hand, which I'm sure they have, a delicate touch. All they want to talk about balance. You know, you get it's very Norwegian or Scandinavian, I should say, in flavor. They have the potato and onion characteristic, which is, I guess, appealing, as it should be with a potato chip. But as they say, what stands out is the quality. And it better be, friends, for $56 for 5 potato chips. It's an excellent accompaniment to their beer or enjoyed on their own. Now, here's the kicker. You think who would pay $56 for a box of 5 potato chips anywhere? Sweden, they got a lot of money, I guess, with a lot of people. Just 100 boxes of these crisps were actually made, and they're actually already sold out. So if you're talking about getting online to go buy the perfect potato chip to pair with your craft beer, you're out of luck until they come back around with it again. So who knew? Okay. And hey, we're going to take a quick break here on the Dine, Wine, and Spirits show, NOLA Drinks edition. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Grammy nominated artist Roddy Romero from Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars. We're going to talk music. We're going to talk his connection to food, Acadian, and culture, all kinds of wonderful stuff. So hey, come on back.
Iron tub ice down full of Falstaff brew. Black head of sun, Bobby Charles cold blue. Catholic church bells toll the Louisiana blues. Oyster rake scraping down Grand Isle Way. Don't get no more salty than Barataria Bay.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey. The way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Nola Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz. Happy to be here with you on a Thursday afternoon. Spinning a little Roddy Romero on the Hub City All-Stars. Coincidentally, we have Roddy Romero on the phone. Roddy, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm great, man. Thanks for taking some time out today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I hope you can hear me well.
Yeah, yeah.
Country.
Oh, well, perfect. Yeah, you got a strong signal out there, man.
All right, good.
Yeah, Roddy. Well, thanks so much for joining us. So I was talking at the top of the show of this little segment that we'd like to call Soul Skillet, and you know, we're gonna talk a little bit about music with you, of course, and the gig coming up at Ponch Train Vineyards this weekend, and then you know, in the second segment I'd like to talk a little bit about your connection to food there in Acadiana. And you have such an interesting story, right? Let's jump into the music. New album's called Gulfstream. It's fantastic, man.
Thank you very much. We've been working on it for quite a while, it seems, and good things take time, like anything else.
Yeah, there you go. So that album came out. Actually, I heard you guys. I heard the first song that we just played, and we played a couple others already earlier in the show. I heard It Must Be, or the first song, and Nothing Wrong With My Baby. I'm drawing a blank on the title. I heard that on OZ, man, a while back, and immediately went over to Louisiana Music Factory and picked up the record because I just thought it was great, man. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Well, you know, the old Alan Toussaint tune.
Yep.
Sadly, we miss him still, but his music carries on, and we'll sing forever, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, hearing his music, and as we all know, most people listening to the show probably know, his reach goes much further than most people actually realize.
Absolutely, absolutely, across the world, so many times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, with your music, Roddy, you know, people, and as listeners know, I'm also the marketing director there for the winery we were playing this weekend, not to create a conflict of interest here or anything, but, you know, and people are asking me about the music and stuff if they haven't heard y'all. And, you know, I tell people, I've actually borrowed some I read from you, a quote from you out of Offbeat a couple of years ago, where you talk about you're from Lafayette. And I think, you know, because it's not just Cajun. You have swamp pop, you got blues, you got NOLA, straight up NOLA R&B stuff going on there, man.
Well, absolutely. You know, Lafayette and New Orleans has always been separated by that good old swamp right there. So it's to me, it's always been parallel and yet different worlds, musically speaking, and food as well. And I guess it goes across the board. Here in Lafayette in the Acadiana area, our sound is shaped by or at least my sound is shaped by the people that have come before us. People like Buckwheat Zydeco, Sonny Landreth, Lil Buck Senegal, Clifton Chenier, Zachary Richard, all these great artists that have come before me. And, you know, they're all connected some kind of way, whether they're singing some French songs or they're playing some good R&B. To me, it's a Lafayette sound. I like to call it Lafayette sound, and it's all of those combined. It's all of those influences, you know. I've been playing music since I was 13 years old, so quite a few decades now, it seems. And I've only been shaped by my environment, and what a great place and a beautiful place to be from.
Absolutely. It's interesting, Roddy, with your music, as I listen to it, as you said, it's this roux, if I can use that term, or gumbo even, which I know it's kind of overwrought, but It's accurate because, you know, I think when you hear even just the influence that you just mentioned, we're talking about Cajun artists, we're talking about Zydeco artists, you know, those lines are blurred, of course. Zachary Richard, which, I mean, you could say, you know, sort of French, Acadian, and folk music, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And, I mean, certainly I know there's some Bobby Charles going on in some of this stuff. And then you mentioned Sonny Landreth, and I know that you have a background and an affinity for, you know, blues slide guitar, man.
Absolutely. Well, again, it's environmental. You can't grow up in the same town as the master slide guitar player in the world, quoted by Eric Clapton or something like that. But he's just been such an influence for me as an artist, as a slide player, as a guitarist, as a songwriter. And again, it goes across the board. Zach, Buckwheat, Clifton. And so on and so on. So our sound, the Hub City All-Star Band, is definitely a melting pot of that. It is something that's been brewing for a long time and or simmering for a long time, and we've been stewing that pot, you know, for a while.
There, I like
what has come out.
We'll keep the cooking. We'll keep using the cooking metaphors, man. We've gone down that road. Might as well just, you know, flog that horse.
That's what life's about, right?
That's it, man. Well, and Roddy, in your story too, which is really interesting, as you mentioned, you started playing music when you were 13. You know, and I don't want to spend too much time focusing on this, but you've had a very interesting past. So you started out. Really, I hate to use this term too, but you started out playing music professionally as a youth, and then, you know, you've kind of had starts and fits, it seems like, throughout your career.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I've had different lives along the way for the last 30 years or so. I started out really, really young, and it really just started very simple as a family band. You know, every Sunday afternoon after the Saints game, we'd clear out the chairs and the furniture, and we'd set up some instruments in the house. My brother played drums. I have older siblings, so my brother-in-law would play bass guitar, and we kind of started very simple like that. And we had an opportunity. We put a band together. We had an opportunity to perform at the Montreal Jazz Festival. And like I said, I was 13 at the time. And so to get on a jet plane with my dad and my brother, of course, my brother was the drummer and he accompanied me, but with older musicians flying to Montreal, it was just fascinating, and I was hooked ever since. So it seemed like the ball started rolling pretty fast after that. Made some records, toured in the summertime of going through high school. I'd get back from summer break and I'd go back to school, and then the next summer came around and we tour again. So we did a lot of traveling. That went throughout, I guess, my mid-20s. And then things kind of slowed down a little bit or simmered down, and my direction changed, I guess. I started playing guitar more. I started diving into that. I landed a gig with Steve Riley in the Mamou Playboy.
Oh yeah!
I guess in 1998 or so, 1999, and so it was a different role in the kitchen, so to speak, and I enjoyed it tremendously. I got to see how it worked from as a sideman point of view, rather than being the front man or the leader of the band. And I felt like my ears opened up so much more. And being on the road again, and at that time we were touring quite a bit, doing lots of folk festivals, really traveling the world. We did Europe and Australia a few times during those years. So it opened my eyes again in a different light. And then after that, you know, the inspiration came back to me to be a front man again. So it comes and goes, you know, it's peaks and valleys.
Yeah, and learning experience, right? Like you said, you
Absolutely.
Took some time off to do that. Now, when Roddy, when you were playing with Steve Riley and the Mamou Playboys, were you playing guitar primarily?
Primarily. That's the only instrument. Ever so often that we would have a more of a relaxing situation or a relaxing gig, I'd hop on accordion, and Steve would trade off. He'd jump on guitar. So there was some moments like that along the way, but primarily a guitar.
That's cool. Interesting. So yeah. Now, and I know sometimes along the way then, I've chatted with Eric Adcock, your keyboard player. And I know Eric, you've known Eric for a long time. Great, fantastic keyboard player. I mean, you guys for a while, you know, we're working day jobs there. And I think you worked if I'm not mistaken, you worked as a shrimper for a while. Is that right?
Well, not so much.
Okay.
I've done that quite a bit, just for pleasure and pain, but not so much.
not for a profession. Okay. Got it.
I've been doing woodworking since, 20 plus years, I guess. It started right after high school, in between touring, being a touring musician in an Cajun Zydeco South Louisiana band. Sometimes it's feast or famine, so you got to figure some other things out.
Mm-hmm.
For me, we have a family friend that was a woodworker, a cabinet maker to be specific. And I guess when I was 18 years old, I started doing that. And I still do it to this day. I love it. It's a great art. It's a great craft. I get to design and also build. And the business that I work in is kitchen cabinets, kitchen cabinets. So I've felt like I've grown up in the kitchen. I'm still in the kitchen. I'm building kitchens. it's all food related. It all comes down to what you eat.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. And that's what we're going to talk about in the next segment, right? You mind if we take a quick break and then let's talk about the connection to food if you're cool with that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Folks, we're chatting with Roddy Romero from Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars. Fantastic musicians. Also fantastic woodworker we're just learning here. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Roddy's connection, deep connection to food in Acadiana. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the Gig of Pontchartrain Vineyard. So come on back here to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. We'll be right back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Breakfast is new to the menu at Dickie Brennan's Tableau. Stop by for Tableau's signature Eggs Benedict or order their famous bread pudding Pan Perdue. Tableau now offers brass brunch on Saturdays and Sundays beginning at 10 a.m. Listen to the rhythmic sounds of a New Orleans-style brass band while enjoying a wonderful brunch in the heart of the French Quarter overlooking historic Jackson Square. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com or call 504-934-3463. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. NOLA Drinks Edition, WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Little po' boy walk there for you from Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars on their new album, Gulfstream. Check it out, folks. It's fantastic. Very pleased to be joined by Roddy himself here on the show. Thanks for sticking around, Roddy.
Thank you very much. Your commercials are making me very hungry and thirsty.
Good. I'm glad to see that it's actually working. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Well, great. You know, and Anthony over here is producing, as he always does every day, pulled up a good one, po' boy walk, and we were talking.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, you know, before we go into the food thing real quick, Roddy, I mean, Gulfstream is such a great album, and you guys, are you seeing, I think, I'm gathering, maybe seeing kind of a new level of success with it?
We're having fun. I'll put it that way. It's like I said. It's been such a tremendous project for us, and we put everything that we have into it, and we're getting lots of great response all over the world. Lots of radio stations have been spinning the record. We've been doing several interviews the last three, four months, I guess. There was a big push with a PR agency that's pushing the record out there in the world. So besides our local fans and friends and family that's been eating it up, we've been getting some success and some nods out there in the world. Now I guess the next step is to bring the music live to them.
Yeah, I can't wait. And Saturday you're doing that at Pond Strand Vineyards. Man, I can't tell you how much I've been looking forward to this show the whole season.
It's great. We're looking forward to it.
Great, great. It's going to be fantastic. And, you know, we were talking about this before. You guys and Eric was telling me this when we were chatting on the phone the other day, that, you know, all of you guys in the band are connected pretty deeply to food. And I know I'm kind of stating the obvious there because of where you come from in Lafayette, but it seems that everybody spends some time in the kitchen, not only building kitchens, but also cooking.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, most of us are good old country boys, and we don't go too far from mom and dad's house. And all the good food is at mom and dad's house.
Absolutely.
Pretty much. So it's hard to find a bad rice and gravy around Acadiana area.
Now, did you learn some chops in the kitchen from your folks and stuff like that?
I did. Yep. I learned pretty much everything from them. You know, just being in the kitchen, watching them work. And I guess my fondest memories is, you know, growing up in the house is just waking up every morning, or especially on the weekends when there was some fresh seafood or we got some shrimp or crabs, just smelling that roux, getting you up in the morning, smelling a roux and coffee being brewed. That's the earliest memories.
That's fantastic. And then, so then did you guys, it sounds like, you know, you grew up obviously around music, doing that tradition, which I think, you know, is still preserved where you are, still goes on here in New Orleans a bit, I think, but, you know, mm-hmm. we kind of see it being lost of, you know, it's like the family jam or the neighborhood jam in the living room. So is what kind of thing, Roddy, where you guys get together, eat some food, then bust out the instruments?
Absolutely. Or it's all day, or it just keeps going. Like I said earlier, back to Sunday afternoons, there was always something cooking. Everybody gathered on Sundays to the end of the week. The family, you know, took care of their business and then gathered at mom and dad's house. And there was some big pot of something, gumbo or some fricasse or whatever fed the family, and always music going on. And like I said, you can knock on every other door in Acadiana, and that is going on still.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and so then you in your cooking and culinary situation, you mentioned that you'd spend some time out for pleasure and pain, I think, as you put it, out catching shrimp. I'm assuming that you're bringing that back. Do you guys do this as a band exercise sometimes, or is this friends, neighbors, family?
Well, you know, when we're traveling on the road and we have some time off or time in between shows and somebody is searching for a kitchen or some pots or a fire, and we're going to get together and cook something. There's been many moments that we've been out on the road, and one particular that comes to mind, the dead of winter, February in Manitoba, we're scouring the city of Winnipeg looking for smoked sausage. And what we can find was this Hungarian shop that had really great smoked sausage, very spicy. And so we found a couple of yard birds, and we had the whole band. We became a cooking team. Cooking a gumbo for these beautiful people that were hosting us for the week there. So
that
happens very, very often.
That's cool. So I was just going to ask, it sounds, you know, if your people are hosting you, so then you get the kitchen access, or you guys looking for places to stay that have the kitchenette so you can just
exactly.
do your thing.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Well,
eat. Go ahead, man. What's that? You got to eat, man. And you got to eat good, right? I mean, you're on the road. Well, Roddy, do me a favor. Tell me a little bit, you know, we talked about food. This show, I always like to say, is a food about the world of drink and food. I kind of flip that around from food and drink. It's called Nola Drinks, you know, for sure. What about on the drink side, man? As far as you guys go or yourself goes, you know, are you beer guy, wine guy, all of the above, none of the above?
All of the above. If you ask me what kind of beer I like, I would probably tell you cold.
Yeah, and free. I'll go with
like
that too.
And free, like any other musician in the world. But we have some really great breweries here in Acadiana area. The Bayou Teche Brewery, if I can drop some names, and Cane Break out here.
Yep.
So there's the last several years, there's been some nice brews happening. I've enjoyed quite a few of those. It's hard to beat just a good old fashioned. We've been substituting simple syrup with fig syrup.
This last summer.
Yeah, this last summer, my girlfriend and I picked quite a few buckets of figs, and we ended up canning some and preserving some, and we had so much syrup left over, so we like to substitute that and have a good old fashioned.
Oh man, that sounds. And what are you using? Are you using rye or are you using bourbon?
Bourbon.
Okay, what's the bourbon of choice, man?
Well, I've been drinking. I don't know. It's Bullet or maybe Bullet Rye. I kind of go back and forth. I know Eric prefers Jack Daniels, a good old Southern old fashioned like that. But yep. I've been enjoying the Bullet here lately.
Yeah, you know, I kind of just, you know, for my place, I kind of prefer, I lean towards the rye side. Mm-hmm. It's like Bullet Rye is a good choice or one of those. Mm-hmm. But I'm liking the idea with the fig syrup because you guys jar it up and then you get a little bit of the syrup from the preserve process and then just drop that in. That sounds great, man.
Absolutely. It's not a bad drink.
That doesn't sound like a bad drink.
If times get hard, some good Jameson, a little bit of syrup, and maybe a good block of ice. That's not bad either.
Hey, that'll work too. That'll absolutely work. Well, I hope you guys are ready to drink a little bit of wine there at Pontchartrain Vineyards on Saturday.
Absolutely. We're looking so forward to it. I never knew that there was any vineyards in South Louisiana, but there you go, and we're so honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Looking forward to playing some good music for you guys.
I can't wait to hear the show, man. I've been looking forward to it a long time. You guys get to play outside there in the vineyard. It's right next to the winery. It's an outdoor stage. Weather looks good. And I was going to mention, too, Roddy, to you, it's always food trucks out there at the event. And in this case, there's going to be two kind of doing the barbecue thing out there. And it's going to be two barbecue food trucks cooking up some good stuff.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Well, Roddy, I really appreciate you taking some time out here to be on the show today. And looking forward to Saturday, man.
Brian, thank you so very much. We appreciate all you're doing on that side of the country.
Hey, my right on, man. My pleasure. I'll see you on Saturday, Roddy.
See you soon. Thanks.
Yep, absolutely. Take care, folks. That was Roddy Romero from Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars playing Jazz in the Vines, Pontchartrain Vineyards this Saturday, 6:30. Check out PontchartrainVineyards.com. Special offer they got going on, online-only offer, ends at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Two adult admissions and a bottle of wine for just $25. Again, that ends at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Grammy-nominated Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars. Do not miss that show, folks. Do not miss that show. We're going to be back hour number two of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. My first guest of three has just made it from battling traffic. So we're going to be back here. We're going to talk sherry. Come on back.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street or go to our website. DrinkLabNOLA.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay. an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to hour number two of the NOLA Drinks Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz. I am happy to be here with you. Thanks for joining the show. All of our guests have arrived safe and sound. They have battled traffic and accident, came uphill both ways. I guess he only really came one way, but I'm just making it sound more dramatic than what it was. And we're talking Sherry Week with members. I'm going to say, is this going to be accurate? Three members of the NOLA Sherry Mafia. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, cool. Well, I like
founding
to,
members.
Founding members. I like to think, because I'm part of the Facebook group, so I like to think I'm kind of like a lower, I'm like a runner. You know, like you kind of like hook me. I start to do like a couple things, you know, a little petty theft, and then I work my way in. I am not made. Okay. I've not been made. But
you will be soon.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
By the end of this hour.
By the end of this hour.
You're in.
Outstanding.
We're going to rough you up.
Oh, yep. You're going to rough me up a little bit? Okay, cool. Right. This isn't going to be like one of those ones, though, where you tell me that it's going to turn out good and then this ends up being my last show, right?
Definitely. No, we wouldn't do that.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm not getting offed here.
We would liquor you up a lot first.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
And then the cement galoshes in the Mississippi River. Awesome.
Cheers.
Sweet. Cheers.
It won't hurt until tomorrow.
Excellent. Let me tell people, because we are on the radio, who we have here in the studio. I am pleased to be welcomed by Christine Janine, otherwise known as CJ Nielsen, from Angeline Restaurant there in the French Quarter, and Jake Kokomore, who is with a Vino Wholesaler Distributor, and Leora Harl Madden. I'm using the Afrikaans.
Here we go.
We did the South African wine thing a while back. Leora Madden, a Pearl Wine Company there in Mid-City on Orleans Avenue. And we're going to spend the hour talking sherry, friends. But we're going to do a little diversion because, Jake, you've brought us in something special to kind of kick off the celebration. Leora just gave us the toast. Tell us what we're tasting here, man.
We have 2006 Saint-Chamond Champagne from Epernay. This is 100% Chardonnay, and this is all handmade from the vineyard all the way to putting it in the case and sending it to America. This is very, very, very special stuff, and every bottle is disgorged to order. So when we put in our order, it is disgorged, labeled, and put in a case and sent to us. So very, very special stuff. So this spends at least, at this point now, we've got champagne coming on the way that spent 10 full years on the lees, which is usually makes it very creamy and rich and full flavored.
This is beautiful, Jake. And there's a really interesting, almost kind of cider note to it. Very pleasant.
Sure. And not only that, so we're about to get into oxidatively aged sherries. This just has just a hint of oxidative qualities right there on the end. And you know, having spent 10 years on the lees, you're going to eventually develop that kind of quality, and I still think this wine can last for another 20-30 years.
This is beautiful stuff. Thank you for sharing this, man. You've I really appreciate it. Thank you. So folks, as Jake mentioned, and I should mention, this is our At the Bar segment, where we bring in folks who maybe are bartenders, wine shop owners, reps, distributors, all these things. So it's not just meant, you know, it's not just the bar, it's just kind of Hey, it's a title I came up with. Give me a break. And we're talking about, you know, it's kind of a roundtable thing that we do. And we mentioned more or less that Sherry Week, which is International Sherry Week, is coming up, I believe, starting a week from Monday, right, on November 7th? That's a Monday, isn't it?
To the 13th.
7th to the 13th, as CJ just told us. So this is an international event, y'all, that's been going on for...
22 countries.
Okay, it's taking place in 22 countries. And how long has it been going on?
That's a good question.
Okay. More than, I mean, it's been going on for a few years, right? More than 5 years.
Ryan.
Okay. Got it. Got it. Excellent. So it's an opportunity for us to celebrate Sherry. And I know CJ said during the break there at Angeline, every week is Sherry Week. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, we have flights every day. They're always featured on our menu. We change them up. We'll do custom ones. Like when we first opened, we had more sherry than anything else by the glass.
Yeah.
And people thought that was crazy, but it worked.
Hey,
we sold it.
Yeah, you did. And I know that you were behind it because actually when you and I first met was a few years back, not, you know, 3-4 years ago maybe, and you were at Square Root. And it was actually during Sherry Week, if I recall correctly.
When I first got started with sherry, or when I was introduced to sherry, it was at Lucky Rooster. With Joe Briand from Herb Saint, or now Herb Saint.
Yep.
And we did Sherry Week, and it was right before we opened. It was super awesome. I didn't know anything about sherry. And I remember, like, printing out, like, the Wikipedia page about sherry and just, like, trying to power through the notes to get through the tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, slowly I built up my knowledge and, you know, read Peter Liam's book, which is fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's where it started.
Cool. Now, Lior, over to you, being a wine and other thing, assorted beverages shop owner. Because, you know, we always say, like, wine shop when it comes to you guys over Pearl, but you guys got great beer and spirits and all that stuff. You've been on board with the sherry thing for a while, and from a retail perspective, you have a great selection.
Yeah, we really try to have a wide range and huge variety of all the different types of sherries. And in the sherry section, we put it in the dessert wine section, and some people say, well, why is the sherry over here? Why isn't it with the spirits? Well, because it's wine.
It's wine.
It's wine.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. It is oxidized wine, you know, that's given a lot of TLC. It's amazing that they make any profit at all off of making sherry, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's something that's important to the palate for those of us who are beverage professionals. But it's also important in that turtle soup. So
absolutely. There's a local connection for you.
That's
and
right.
that definitely the stuff I think that typically finds its way or traditionally found its way into turtle soup is not necessarily what we're talking about would find our way desirably into
exactly.
a glass these days. And we'll get into that too. But Jake, over to you. So you're with Vino, who's a distributor here in town. And I am guessing by virtue of the fact that you're sitting in the studio today, Jake, you guys carry some sherries.
We do. We carry... very, very, very special sherries. We have carried Hidalgo in the past. Unfortunately, they are out of the market now. But at the same time, we have Valdespino, which is a very, very excellent house that makes entry-level wines called Real Tesoro, which are very affordable sherries that are very, very excellent wines that come from some of the same vineyards that Valdespino's best wines come from as well, particularly the single vineyard Machanudo, which is at the top of the elevation in Jerez, which has 100% Albariza soil. We've just recently brought in Laguita, which is also a part of the Grupo Estevez, which is one of the absolute greatest values in sherry, and it's got one of the most recognizable products. You'll see a little orange cap and a tiny little string, and grab a half bottle of that at your local wine shop, and you've got a pretty nice little aperitif and certainly a nice little entry into your dinner. We've recently picked up Yuste, which is the old Pedro Romero Solera.
Okay.
Pedro Romero was one of the greats of sherry. And unfortunately, about 4 years ago, the family kind of defaulted on some of their their business loans, and unfortunately they had to kind of shut down. But Ustay took it over and waited a little while before they kind of rebranded and brought those insanely delicious, very inexpensive sherries back into back into the bottle and into people's glasses. So I'm very excited about kind of getting Ustay started as a special project as well. And so far, and that's just about it. We also carry some Equipo Navazos from Javier Barquim, who is ultimately the god of Jerez, and he makes and chooses and advises so many people in so many ways, and it really is a special place to go see, because when you see the project and how it works and all of the moving parts, it's a logistical nightmare, but it is.
It's fascinating.
Wonderful and fascinating to watch them put it all together.
All right, you guys, here's what we're going to do, because we've just unpacked a lot of stuff there. We're going to come back to this. We're going to talk a little bit about how sherry's made, which is very interesting. Hopefully we'll get a little bit of time to talk about the history of it, which is also equally as interesting. We're going to talk Sherry Week, Sherry Mafia, drink sherry. We're just sherry. Hey, come on back.
Breakfast is new to the menu at Dickie Brennan's Tableau. Stop by for Tableau's signature Eggs Benedict or order their famous bread pudding Pan Perdue. Tableau now offers brass brunch on Saturdays and Sundays beginning at 10 a.m. Listen to the rhythmic sounds of a New Orleans-style brass band while enjoying a wonderful brunch in the heart of the French Quarter overlooking historic Jackson Square. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com or call 504-934-3463. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian here with you. We're talking sherry with CJ Nielsen from Angeline, Jake Kokomore from Vino Wholesaler, and Lior Madden from Pearl Wine Company. Thanks y'all for being here, by the way.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing bottles in. So, you know, we were talking about this during the break just now. It's an interesting, convoluted even story. I think I used the word tortuous, if I could actually say it properly at the beginning of the broadcast, about the history of sherry. And I want to touch on it a little bit, but then I'd like to really focus a little bit more for the listeners out there on how it's made, the different styles, and sort of differentiating what you may think it is or what you don't know about it. Lior, do you want to give us like a 2-minute version of the history, maybe talk about the golden age in the late 19th century? And are you comfortable with that? And then we'll, okay, go for it.
I mean, really, you know, when you think about sherry, you've got to, go back to Napoleon, when he was conquering Spain and had his huge empire. And I think that that's what resonates with people. That's what people remember about sherry. And that's how they associate it. There's certainly more to it.
So you mean like the romantic notion behind some of it,
right?
Yes. Okay. And we're talking about, just so we're clear too, we're talking about Jerez or sherry, and we're talking about the Andalusia region in Spain, which is the southwestern part, Moorish influence.
Yes. And so... you know, they figured out that this wine that they were making in this small village or area was lasting on the ships. It was lasting as it traveled, and it still tasted good, mm-hmm. really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that, I mean, it sounds very cliche, but it's true. I mean, Napoleon was a big part of Sherry's history because he kind of embraced it and made it his own, and that's how it gained its popularity.
Right. Now, and of course, then we're talking about the 18th century in this case, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we want to let's just fast forward here a little bit.
Sure.
So Sherry became, and you guys feel free to jump in, but Sherry became very popular in the mid-19th century, was really seen, and I'm skipping huge amounts of the story, but we'll revisit these things in future shows. It became incredibly popular, but it was also these vineyards were seen on par with the great Bordeaux's or Burgundy's. So we were actually getting single vintage sherries, as opposed to the Solera system, which we'll talk about shortly. So it was really kind of a different thing, and often unfiltered and unfined wines we're talking about, but almost, right. And even unfortified, correct?
Yeah, even unfortified. I mean, just as organic as it gets in terms of what we consider today to be organic. And, you know, this was something that was just a bit different because of the oxidation. So I think I've heard Jake talk a lot about the Solera system, and he does a really good job of explaining it.
And before we get into that real quick, so I mean, I just kind of want to cover the history basis.
Yeah, sure.
So we kind of talk about maybe more of an older style of sherry in the 19th century, and then we start to talk about, well, the Solera system being introduced that we'll come back to, and I don't want to confuse listeners, but this becomes a topic of how we go from grape to glass, cover mm-hmm. it that way. And then it kind of, you know, we move forward, and it kind of fell out of favor, even globally. So it's not a prohibition thing in the U.S. directly, where I'm going to skip another huge part of the story, but we move to the, like the 60s and 70s, and this is when we're getting what we maybe, some of us out there associate with what our grandparents drank or something, cream sherries and sweet sherries, which mm-hmm. are actually taking, I guess, dry sherries and then lesser quality grapes, even stuff where it's unfermented grape juice, and we're getting these so-called, you know, Harvey's Bristol Cream and all of that kind of stuff. And so I think people are very, and everybody's nodding, so I think I kind of have nutshell version here, right? So let's set the way back machine just a little bit then. And you know, sherry's now kind of experiencing a new golden age, maybe, or we're coming into that. So when we go back then to sherry production in the 19th century, Jake, the Solera system was introduced or really brought to bear more completely, yes. Right?
It's something that's still very hard to articulate, even though I've seen it.
Yeah.
So I like to break it down into what they call criaderas. And that way it's a lot easier for you to understand. If you have a lineup of six barrels, and in Valdespino's case, it's going to be seven. 7 years is kind of how you want to look at it. And the last barrel is what ultimately gets put into the bottle. But they only drain about 80% of that barrel to bottle. And then that goes into bottle and is sent to shops, restaurants, to be poured by the glass, to be sold to consumers, to be put into turtle soup. Then that sixth barrel gets emptied, only about 80%, which goes into that seventh final barrel. And it goes all the way on down the line to the first barrel, which ultimately goes into the second. And then the new wine that was just harvested that year goes into the first barrel, which still contains about 20% of that last year's wine.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, in that first barrel, you have, in many cases, for instance, the Tio Diego, this is an 1883 Solera of Amontillado. Now, that first Solera has tiny, tiny little droplets of 120-year-old wine.
Right.
So ultimately you're using those barrels to kind of create a very, very consistent product.
Now, it may be a way to think about it, and tell me if I'm wrong. I kind of imagine it as a pyramid kind of concept, if you will, mm-hmm. where the oldest stuff is at the bottom and the newer stuff is at the top. And it's almost like that thing where you would stack the champagne glasses and pour in the first one, and it spills out over, but in the opposite direction.
Yes. Absolutely.
I like that analogy.
Thank you. Yeah. I came up with that myself.
Quite
that is
Thank
Very
you.
Impressive.
I didn't actually read that anywhere.
Can
I really
I
come
use
up with that?
That?
You can.
I can steal
you
it.
You can. Did I just take one step further up in the Sherry Mafia
you
by
did.
What I just
saw? You did.
Awesome.
You're making your way.
Awesome. So cool. It's a and Jake, you made a great point. So we are talking about dealing with certain. It's called a fractional. What's the term? Fractional blending.
Yeah.
So and so fractional blending. So we're taking. Older, this is not a single vintage process. This is sort of migrating the older wines and mixing them with the newer wines to create one, both consistency, I think, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And then also create complexity.
Yes. Well, it's most important to start at the beginning of the process, which is either Manzanilla or Fino.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through that process that I spoke of earlier. But instead of that seventh barrel going into bottle, half of that product is going to go into bottle, and half of that product is going to go into another Solera. In Tio Diego's instance, it's a four-year short Solera of Amontillado, where the first 7 years, or the Criadera system, is biologically aged under a veil of flor, which is sort of the yeast feeding on top of the liquid, leaving about 25% of air left in the barrels. So that yeast can feed on top and create a veil of floor, which, for lack of a better word, is sort of, it's kind of a,
you know, like a scum.
It's a scum, basically.
Go ahead, CJ. What were you going to say? It's like a crust, right?
It's an indigenous yeast, and it
yep.
It just have all the sugar.
Yeah, it forms a barrier that doesn't allow any oxygen to reach that. That's called a biologically aged wine. Now, when it reaches that seventh year, they split it to be oxidatively aged if it doesn't go into bottle.
In the case of an Amontillado, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and we'll get into some of that stuff too a little bit, because some sherries are actually made without floor at all in general.
Yeah.
So some are actually not really oxidative because it's an anaerobic process. But anyway, we don't want to get too confusing to people, because it really is. I'm confusing myself here. But folks, come on back. We're going to talk a little bit more about sherry. We're going to keep unpacking this stuff with you. So stay tuned.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. NOLA Drinks Edition, WGSO 990 AM, New Orleans. Hey, we're still spinning some Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars. Check them out this Saturday, PontchartrainVineyards.com. I can't wait. But right now, present in front of us, even better, we're talking Sherry, Sherry Week with my friends here from the Sherry Mafia, CJ Nielsen from Angeline, Jake Kokomore from Vino Wholesaler. And I have to point everybody when I talk to them, you know you're on the radio, I can't see this. And my good pal, my, what did you call her during the break, Jake? You called her Lady Pal?
Bro Lady.
Leora Mann from Pearl Wine Company.
That's me.
And we're all, and Anthony's here working the board as always. We're here drinking sherry. So everybody's a bro, lady, pal, something like that in the room.
Sherry Broad.
Sherry Bro.
Sherry Broad City.
Sherry Broad, Sherry Sister, Sherry Bro. I like it. Cool. So CJ, we were talking a little bit during the break. This is it's a big topic. So, I mean, we could get into terroir vineyard, terroir bodega, which is essentially the cellar, if you want to think about it that way, but they're typically above ground in sherry. The different styles, I think this confuses people too. The different styles can be pretty confusing to people. And there are five or six principal styles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that usually when I start people out, I tend to go towards the drier side. Mm-hmm. Just because everyone thinks that sherry tastes like the sherry they stole from their grandma.
Like the Harvey's Bristol Cream that we were talking about earlier.
Like that's what they think it's sweet. So I start with Fino and Manzanilla. And so Fino, super dry. All the floor eats up all those sugars. And then Manzanilla is aged on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And is super dry as well, but has a lot of salinity. His barrels breathe.
Right.
Like, so it picks up a lot of that. And so it goes so well with New Orleans cuisine. Like, raw oysters, if you own a restaurant that serves any raw oysters, you should have Manzanilla. It just makes sense.
Nice and savory, right? I mean, we get that nice sort of savory umami note in all sherry, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you were mentioning the Fino and the Manzanilla. And something that I've learned somewhat recently, I thought those were two distinct styles. They're basically made the same way.
Yeah.
We're just talking about two different villages.
It's the Palomino grape.
Yep.
And one's aged on the ocean and one's not.
Okay. And do we have a caller with a question. Okay. You guys, we're going to take a question here. So Line one, we have somebody from the Bayou Wine Garden on. Is that right?
Yes, yes. We're here.
Yeah, how you doing? You got a question about sherry?
Yeah, I'd like to know, can Jake tell me the biological breakdown of fluorine?
Did you hear that question, Jake? Can you talk about the biological breakdown? I mean, it's going to vary widely by bodega, is it not?
I didn't quite get the question. The caller sounded a little broken up there.
Are you getting a haze call here?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. So the question was the biological breakdown of the floor, which is going to be very widely varied by style,
of course,
and
by
bodega.
And by bodega, indeed. I mean, and also when you're making Fino in Manzanilla, Fino grapes come from a very specific part of Jerez, and Manzanilla grapes come a little bit closer towards the Atlantic and near that little river that empties out.
But all Palomino, same variety, right?
Absolutely, in Sanlúcar de Barrameda. Mm-hmm. So when you're closer to the ocean, you get a very, very different, yeast than you're going to get when you're getting your Fino grapes aged that are a little bit further inland where it's a little bit warmer. Sanlúcar de Barrameda, which is where all of the Manzanilla is, Palomino is grown for Manzanilla, and where all of the barrels are aged in Sanlúcar, you're getting a much cooler region, a much much more crisp and clean style than the Fino. So you're definitely going to have different biological makeups of the floor. And I think the Finos tend to be a little bit more aggressive than the Manzanillas.
Again,
you're getting a leaner, cleaner, crisper style from Manzanilla, which is why they call it Manzanilla. Because
go ahead, caller. Go ahead.
We're impressed. We'll take 2 cases.
Very good. Oh, man. Hey, man, way to do business on my show.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Hey, guys from Bayou Wine Garden, thanks for calling in with a difficult question that Jake handled with great skill. Yeah, so, I mean, we'll talk to you guys next time. Yeah, Jake, I mean, and something interesting, too, that I think is the case, and tell me if I'm wrong, where grapes can really, so like the Palomino grape, or CJ answered this question, the Palomino grape, you can actually get the grapes from anywhere, and if it's made in Jerez, it's actually Fino, and if it's made in Sanlúcar, it's Amontillado. So the single vineyard kind of...
No, Manzanilla.
Manzanilla, excuse me.
Manzanilla means apple-like, like an apple.
Yep.
So it's crisper, cleaner. The acidity is a little bit more sharp.
It's also the same word for chamomile in Spain, by the way.
Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sorry, not Amontillado, Manzanilla. And so this is the same process, and grapes can kind of come from anywhere, but it's the differences then in the bodega. And it's the differences then in the environment in the bodega and
absolutely.
Then the style and the Solera system, right?
Yep.
Is that right, CJ?
Yep. Absolutely true.
Okay. So, so we're talking in the style with the Fino, and the Manzanilla, we're talking about a drier style. So then we kind of move down the spectrum a little bit. Anybody want to jump in? What would be the sort of the next thing? Do we go to Palo Cortado or is that Amontillado?
Amontillado.
Yeah.
Would be next. Palo Cortado is kind of mysterious. There's, I have a copy of a documentary that I got to see. I don't know if any of you have seen it.
I would like to borrow that.
I would love to see it.
I want to do a viewing of it somewhere.
Let's do a movie night during Sherry Week.
Let's do
That's a great idea. CJ's waving a DVD around.
Paulo Cortado.
Hey, perfect.
It's in a different language format, so I had to use a weird filter, whatever kind of... I'm not good at technology. My boyfriend figured it out. But yeah, it definitely has... I got to watch it... Anyway, I got to watch it when I was doing my sherry competition last year in November up in Brooklyn at the Clover Club. And yeah.
Interesting stuff?
Yeah, it's super awesome. I mean, it's so interesting because... A lot of the winemakers, there's the mystery of Paulo Cortado is completely mysterious. And at the end of the movie, you're still like, what is that category?
Well, and I think that's
and you don't really know. And it's
That's one that varies by the interpretation almost of the bodega.
Exactly, interpretation. Well, every winemaker says something different.
Right.
And it can be forced as well. It can be
Forced, but originally it was accidental, and it was something that the winemaker, that's what they drank.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's bring this back to real quick so that listeners know what we're talking about. So on with Amontillado, so with the Fino and the Manzanilla, we're talking about this layer of floor, the yeast that actually sits almost like a crust permanently over the wine. Mm-hmm. And it feeds on the sugars, it feeds on the glycerol. And that, you know, and then actually some of that material falls down, you get lees contact, all that. Now with the Amontillado, what we're talking about, this is a process where it's partial. So that stuff, the Fino and the Manzanilla, is not oxidized. The stuff, the Amontillado, then is partially. So it almost starts its life, if I'm not mistaken, is like a Fino mm-hmm. process, and then becomes more what we'll get into with an Oloroso. So it starts its life as a Fino and ends its life as an Oloroso, or caught somewhere in the middle. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think Amontillado is the most, case can be made for Palo Cortado, but Amontillado is so special because it goes through, in many cases, 5 to 7 years of Solera as a Manzanilla or a Fino, and then ultimately goes through another 5 to 7 years of Amontillado oxidative aging. So biological and then oxidative. I mean, in many cases, there are people who do 20 years, and again, logistically, it's hard for me to articulate and wrap my head around those things, so mm-hmm. I'm just speaking in what I know, which is the 7 years of biological aging as a Manzanilla or Fino, and then 4 to 7 years of aging as an Amontillado.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically, both of those toe the line between biological and oxidative.
Right, and so it's kind of it's a middle ground thing, like we're talking about. It spends its life that way. And then
neutral ground.
Yeah, and then the Palo Cortado, I guess, is kind of the same thing, right, where it's that's hard to get your finger on because mm-hmm. Go ahead and jump in here, Leroy. It's a little hazier when it goes from, this is really kind of where this interpretation thing comes in, right? Where
it
goes from, when does it go from being a Fino to an Amontillado, is somewhere in between lies the indistinct land of Palo Cortado, right?
Yeah. And people have tried to trace it back to its origin, and it's kind of like the Big Bang Theory. There's no scientific certainty of exactly what it is, how it's defined, or how it came to be.
Who you're drinking with and who's telling you the story, right?
That's right. That's right. I like that one. I like that. Yep.
Well, basically, you can also get into this in terms of the pressing of the grapes. So we're talking about entirely of Palomino with Fino and Manzanilla and Amontillado, you're getting the first pressing. So the grapes that go into the vats, the grapes that at the bottom that get pressed by the weight of the grapes above, basically your free run juice.
The free run juice, yep.
Is what's called a pama. Your first pama is what goes to making Manzanilla and Fino, and then ultimately Amontillado. Because you're making the Fino and the Manzanilla, and then those are going to make Amontillado oxidatively. Now, grapes that are the second pressing, when you fully put all of the energy into getting all of the juice out of those grapes, and then those grapes go immediately into oxidative aging, which is Oloroso.
The so difference no between, floor, right? 100% oxygen. No floor. And no coating that keeps it. So these barrels are not filled as high, and we're getting a large oxygen content.
Yes, immediately from juicing into barrel to be oxidatively aged. Now, the difference between Oloroso, Amontillado, and Palo Cortado, there's a similarity between Palo Cortado and Amontillado, but the only difference is the Palo Cortado doesn't. Palo Cortado is a first pressing that is put into a Manzanilla or Fino Solera. And
so categorized that way, right? Marked and categorized, sort of put in that file, if you will.
It's the first pressing. They join their brothers as a Manzanilla or Fino, and enigmatically the floor disappears.
And it's an act of God.
And yeah, also it's an accident. It's a natural accident of a natural accident. Mm-hmm. And they make a mark, which is Palo.
Yeah, with chalk.
Yes.
And they pull it and set it aside. So the mark is Palo. Cortado means to be cut from the production. Mm-hmm. So there are people who force it where they make a first pressing and then immediately age that first pressing. But what you're missing there is a couple of years, and in many cases, 3 to 4 years of a Manzanilla. And then, again, the floor automatically disappears and then is removed. So Palo Cortado, some producers go through 2-3 years of Manzanilla or Fino aging, biological aging. Some go through 1 or 2. Some don't go through any at all, and those are the wineries that force it. And sometimes you can taste.
Sometimes there are two people will fortify it at a time to kill the flora. Exactly. Off, right. So they higher do it alcohol on purpose kills the bacteria
rather than the accident of the flora specifically dying.
Well, let's do this real quick because we're going to take a break in just 1 or 2 minutes. Hold up, real quick, Anthony. Let's talk about Oloroso. We kind of touched on. So Oloroso then has no flora. We don't get that layer of bacteria over the top. We get airspace, and it's a more viscous, kind of fruitier thing, right? And it's very, and that's all oxidative.
I mean, it's naturally dry.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a perceived sweetness.
It's a perceived sweetness because that is your grandmother's cream sherry.
Right.
Is Oloroso with additives.
With additives.
But
you get that dried fruit kind of note, and I think with the evaporation.
Yeah. Fig for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we have this whole spectrum then because people think that sherry is always oxidative. Well, really, in the case of Manzanilla and Fino, it is not. It's anaerobic.
Complete opposite.
It's exactly. There's no oxygen going on.
It's the OG skinny wine.
It's the OG skinny wine.
That's what I always call it. Like, I'm like, if you want to go on a diet, drink Fino and Manzanilla sherry.
It's described as lean, right?
That's how I want a weight loss competition.
Very nice, CJ. I like that. So if you want a diet, get with the Fino and the Manzanilla.
Yeah, don't get that weird skinny wine where they just put water in it.
Yeah, and don't drink the Harvey's Bristol Cream either, right?
And it has more alcohol than those wines.
So even it's like a win-win. We're going to take a break here real quick on the Dole Drink Show, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the state of sherry today. Come on back.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured. In my head.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian. I'm here with you, your host. Thanks for being here today. Last few minutes of the show, little Fats Domino walking to New Orleans. We were actually just looking at pictures of Lior from the Beyonce concert.
You can tell
that this is a very formal show because we're swapping photos. We're talking about how CJ is going to dress up as a purple crayon for Halloween.
And Prince.
So are you going to do, this is going to be like a costume change thing?
The crayons for handing out candy early,
in the neighborhood,
evening.
Family friendly.
Yeah, because I live in Mid-City. And then Prince is going to be later in the night.
And the adult.
I'm going to rock the mustache.
Oh, sweet. So like the fine 80s mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
I mean,
Prince.
I love to wear a mustache.
Awesome.
I've dressed up for Tales of the Toddy as Tom Selleck.
Oh, so you do like the fine mustache then.
And okay. I think my cocktail had something to do with the Basque region.
Oh,
it was like,
okay.
What was it?
Wait, Tom Selleck by way of the Basque region?
Yeah.
That is a strange and interesting. So did you have
stickers.
The cutoff shorts and the Ferrari and then?
I was total Ferrari.
No, the mustache.
The mustache was, it chafes your nose like a lot. It was really uncomfortable.
Well, Jake, since we're on the subject, what are you doing? What are your Halloween costume plans?
I have a panda suit. Probably just wear that. Just go easy.
Awesome.
I'm not much of a costume builder.
Got it.
Yeah.
You got one.
I've got a closet filled with old costume stuff that I can always,
you know,
everybody's got one of those for Mardi Gras, but you know, I think I'm just going to go with panda suit.
Why not?
It's simple. It's easy.
Awesome.
Perfect. Everybody loves it.
Cool. Now we got our Halloween bases covered here.
Yeah.
So you guys, in the last little bit here of the show that we have, we're talking about Sherry. We're talking about Sherry Week, which kicks off on Monday, November 7th. We're drinking a very nice Oloroso now. I think we've kind of covered which. Did you want to mention which Oloroso this is, Jake?
Oh, this is Valdespino's Don Gonzalo.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Criadera that I believe is 1865. So you're looking at an extremely, extremely old wine here. It's fun, and I mean, it is so beautiful. It sort of teeters on this edge of almost, you know, it's so delicate, but yet so, so strong. It really teeters the edge of falling apart and being about as strong as you can get. So it's a really wonderful wine.
It's a beautiful wine. Well, and y'all, we have about maybe 3-4 minutes left here at the end of the show. Really quickly, so I think we're seeing that Sherry's regained a certain amount of popularity. It's been finding its way back into cocktail bars globally. Certainly here in New Orleans and around this country is no exception to that. Are we starting to see things where perhaps some of the single vineyard or single vintage stuff is coming back, and the unfiltered stuff, I guess, which I believe is called en rama, is coming back, the unfine stuff? I think there's like little bubblings of getting back to that late 19th century stuff. Is that happening, or do we think it's going to happen? Because sherry is really inexpensive, and these production things, all the stuff we've talked about today, it's really hard to make. It's very painstaking. So are we going to build, is there a market that's going to kind of drive a higher price point and bring in some of this sort of older, more difficult, potentially way to make it?
I mean,
anybody have a thought on that?
I personally don't wish that it goes for a higher price point, but, I mean, we're selling more and more of it at the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Flights, cocktails. I mean, even the cocktail that we have on the menu, the Right Side of Jackson, is an en rama sherry, which just kind of pushes people into like, oh, what's en rama? You know, like, oh, it's unfiltered, blah, 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 and gets the conversation going. And I mean, every night that I work, we serve a flight or we serve, you know, a glass of sherry. A full glass of sherry.
A proper pour.
6 ounces, people. not that. I mean, 2 ounces if it's fancy.
Got it.
And appropriate.
CJ, do me a favor really quick in like 10, 15 seconds. Tell people where Angeline is.
1032 Charters.
Okay. And
in the French Quarter.
What's the website? Facebook? All that?
AngelineNola.com.
Yeah, I think if you search that, you'll find it. Leora, what about you?
Pearl Wine Company, 3700 Orleans. We have a sherry free tasting and seminar with the one and only Mr. Jake Kokemore.
That guy right there.
Thursday, yep, Thursday, November 10th from 5 to 7 p.m. Stay after and geek out with us.
Cool. And I mentioned the tasting tonight already and who was there. So 5 to 7.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I figured we were going to get bogged down in sherry with
you today,
which
and
is
we
great.
Did.
Jake, thanks so much, man, for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having
it.
Me.
So we can see you at various sherry tastings and events around town.
Absolutely.
You're the man with the strings behind the scenes.
A little bit.
Sort of.
A string.
A string. Thanks, y'all, for being here. We had a great chat about sherry. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. I really appreciate it. Thank y'all for sharing everything. Folks, I'll be back next Thursday with the show. I'll tell you about it a little bit later. And Tim will be in tomorrow. So until then, New Orleans, cheers, y'all.